Today on Radio Gorgeous, I'm really thrilled to meet new author and all-round inspiration, Ella Dove. 3 years ago, Ella tripped and fell whilst out running. Unbelievably, this simple small fall led to Ella having her right leg amputated, aged just 25. In that one moment, Ella's life changed forever. But rather than letting it hold her back, it has made her even more determined to follow her dreams. Ella has just published her first novel, Five Steps to Happy. Hi Ella, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, thank you very much.
I read your wonderful new book whilst on holiday a couple of weeks ago, and it's a real page turner. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what it's about?
I can. So it's called Five Steps to Happy, and it's a semi-autobiographical book, so loosely based on my own story, about a girl that loses her leg, and it's her journey back to happiness.
I know it might be a bit painful, but can you take us back to actually what happened? What's behind the story of the book?
Yeah, no, of course. So in 2016, I had an accident, as you said, when I was 25, where I went out jogging with my sister. And on the way back home, halfway along the path, I tripped over. And it was completely flat. I don't know, you know, quite how this happened, but what happened was I dislocated my knee and I also had a fracture. So the combination of those two injuries meant that the blood couldn't get through to my foot, so it cut off the circulation. Oh. Obviously, I didn't know this at the time. Mm. At the time, I thought I'd broken my leg. Mm. You know, I didn't think it was that serious until they got me to hospital that they realised how serious it actually was.
Oh, gosh, and I just you describing that, I can't imagine what the pain was like.
Mm. Well, it's difficult to kind of recollect because I think with trauma, any kind of trauma, the brain tends to block these things out. So I can't actually tell you what the pain was like either. Obviously, I know it was excruciating and I know it was the worst pain I've ever had in my life, but I can't actually physically recall it. It's very bizarre how the brain protects you like that.
Yeah, it's probably just as well, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, because you were with your sister at the time, as you mentioned. Mm. As I understand, neither of you had a phone with you, did you?
No, we didn't. So because we were going out for just a kind of quick 20 minutes around our local area, obviously we didn't have a bag or anything, and it was just kind of like put your key down your sports bra situation. So we thought, oh, I'll be fine, don't need a phone, as many people I'm sure do when they go out jogging. And you know, obviously we didn't want to listen to music because we were together, so we were chatting. So when it happened, I remember saying to my sister, go and get help, and her obviously saying, I'm not going to leave you. Yeah. Which obviously was the right thing to do. So we had to wait for somebody to come along who had a phone to call an ambulance, which I can't tell you how long that was, because obviously when your brain is in shock like that, it felt like hours. It might have been, you know, might have been 2 minutes, might have been 10 minutes, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So this man called an ambulance, but then he said he had to go because he had a train to catch. So he actually hung up and left me there, which was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I find that quite unbelievable, Ella. I mean, that person, and we don't know who he is, do we? He becomes the character Alexander in your book, and you become Heidi, don't you?
Yes, to an extent. I mean, I did try and make her as different to me as possible. So she's a little bit, I'm 28 now, she's 32, she's a little bit older than me. I'm a journalist, she's an actress. So obviously there's an element of similarity in the kind of artiness, but you know, she's got short purple hair. I have
very curly
brown hair, yeah. Just to explain for people that can't see me. And in personality we are different as well. I mean, she kind of deals with things slightly differently to me. She's probably a bit more volatile than I was. But then I guess that makes it, you know, a better read in a way.
Yeah. But in the book, what's interesting is Heidi does meet, you know, the man on the path with Alexander, but you've never met this man.
No.
How would you feel if you saw him today or in the near future?
It's an interesting question because I can't remember what he looks like. So all the details in the book are completely fictionalised. I can't tell you how old he was. I can't tell you what he was wearing. Absolutely no recollection whatsoever. But if I did remember and I bumped into him, I think I'd just be a bit sort of stunned. I don't think I would necessarily hold a grudge, just because I'm not the sort of person that holds a grudge generally. I'm quite kind of just move on with it, you know, have an argument with like a family member and I'm over it 5 minutes later. So I don't hold any resentment towards him. In a way, I feel like I the word forgiveness is a big thing, but I can't say that I forgive him, because it actually wasn't really his fault. I think what happened happened, and you know, even if he had stayed, the fact is the blood supply had been cut off. Yeah. So it's not, you know, people say, oh, could you ever forgive him? Well, it still would have happened even if he had stayed. So it wasn't his fault. So it's not, I don't necessarily need to forgive him, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What I loved about the book actually is that you bring a lot of what I imagine may have happened to you to life through Heidi's eyes. And through her, we see what I found was actually quite emotional to read was the ups and downs of rehabilitation and that whole process. The whole part in the book where Heidi is really frustrated in the kitchen and she's having to move around the kitchen and trying to reach up to the top cupboard. Mm. I mean, that really got to me, actually, the way you wrote that. Mm. I found that really, you know, it was like, I just wondered how much of the book is you.
Yeah, so the recovery journey obviously is the same as mine. So I was in hospital, then I went to a rehabilitation clinic for 6 weeks. I had physio, I had and still have counselling.
Right.
So in that way, it is the same. So I think in terms of, the scenes like that, the one you mentioned in the kitchen, those kind of things, they were based on reality. And I think they have to be in a way to make it realistic. You know, when you are learning to walk again, obviously it's something we all take for granted. Yeah. And then suddenly you can't do it anymore. Mm. So it is a real journey. The word journey is a bit cliche, I know, but it is a real journey. And when I was in the kitchen, I remember I had some occupational therapy sessions, one where I had to make pesto pasta. And so I remember just at the time being really frustrated, thinking like, for goodness sake, I'm not, there's nothing wrong with me kind of mentally.
Yes.
I know how to make pesto pasta.
Yeah.
And you know, the occupational therapist I went to boil the kettle and she said, no, I'll do that. And I remember thinking, oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So that frustration that Heidi feels in the book is the same.
Yeah.
And obviously the physical challenges of having to hold on to the work surface to kind of walk around and carrying things across the kitchen, you know. So a lot of those physical challenges are the same as ones I experience.
In addition to being a presenter for Radio Gorgeous, I also run my own life coaching practice, so I know how transformational goal setting can be. And the book is called 5 Steps to Happy, and in the book Heidi identifies her own goals.
Mm.
So without giving too many of them away, can you talk through a couple of them?
Yeah, I can. So they're all to do with the different elements of her life. So obviously the kind of physical side of things, and I'm being deliberately cryptic in case I give too much away.
Yeah.
For example, learning to go on public transport again, things like that.
How many of those goals or kind of goals were your goals?
Yes, yeah, a few of them. So another one, a big one actually, is body image. So in the book, Heidi mentions about being able to put skinny jeans on again. And that is something that I also had. So I now actually don't really wear skinny jeans anymore because I don't really like the way they look with my prosthetic leg. So whilst I would say, oh yeah, my body image is fine, obviously what I've just said kind of indicates the opposite. Or, you know, that there are still things that I'm dealing with. But yeah, so I think your whole image of yourself changes, and it's learning to kind of, it sounds again cliche, but learning to love yourself again. You know, I couldn't, similar to Heidi, I really struggled to look at my stump or touch it, or in hospital they encourage you to kind of touch it to desensitise the area after surgery. And for a long time I just couldn't. I couldn't put my hands anywhere near it because I just found it just so like awful and shocking and disgusting and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
so I couldn't go near it. And now, you know, I wouldn't say I'm like caressing it constantly, but you know, I have no problem touching it or showing, like taking my, if you asked me to take my leg off here, I would do it and have no problems. But, you know, but at the beginning it was very much a thing that I would keep it hidden. Whilst it was obvious that I had a prosthetic leg, there's something about the actual bare skin of it being on show that really affected me to begin with.
Yeah, so it's almost like you were hiding it to yourself as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I can understand that because it must have been such a shock, because literally one day you had your leg as it was, and then, you know, after a period of time in hospital, it was just gone.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that would be like.
Mm.
And it wasn't actually really that long ago. So I know you mentioned earlier about journey. I imagine you're still on a kind of journey with that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the things my counsellor says actually is we talk a lot about grief and, you know, losing a limb is grief that you're experiencing because it is loss and all the emotions that are associated with grief. If you lose a person, it's obviously got some similarities. So the different stages of grief that I've definitely been through, and we've talked a lot about it in counselling sessions, and I've identified going through every single stage of them, you know, the anger, the denial, bargaining, depression, all of them, and then eventually acceptance. And I definitely am in the acceptance stage now, but that doesn't mean that I'm completely fine. I don't think it's human to be completely fine. No. You know, there are times where, I don't know, I want to get on a bus and the bus, I can't run for it. And so then the bus goes and you just feel yourself standing there thinking, God's sake, why don't I have two legs? And I can't run. It's silly things like that, where although I'm in the acceptance phase, there will be things like that that still irritate me or upset me. So yeah, it's an ongoing process, I think.
Did writing the book help with that process?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was very therapeutic to explore the emotions. So I don't think any of the emotions that came out in my writing were things that hadn't already been expressed to people close to me. For example, my family, I'm very, very close to my family and obviously my sister particularly. And none of it, I don't think any of it came as a surprise to them when they read the book because, you know, they saw me at my lowest points in hospital.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting for me about your process of writing the book, because as you said, it must have been quite cathartic for you. And I know you've been a journalist for a long time, but I understand you always wanted to be a novelist. Mm. So how did you go about making that dream come true, Ella?
Well, so I did a writing course in 2015, so that was the year before my accident.
Okay.
I'd always wanted to write a book. As a little girl, I would write plays and make my sister perform them with me. And
I like that, you made her.
Yeah, no, literally, big sister, bossy big sister. I'd be like, you're this character, put this outfit on.
Whether you like it or not.
No, she was happy to go along with it. She enjoyed it.
So she said, Ella.
Well, yeah, at the time. So it started right from when I was a child. And so I did this writing course, a writing course run by Curtis Brown, one of the big literary agencies.
Yeah.
So it's called Curtis Brown Creative. And they have all sorts of different courses online. Like they have a 3-month one, a 6-month one.
Great.
Loads of them. They're really, really good. For anyone that wants to write a book, I recommend them. So I did the 3-month one in 2015. And you had to sort of apply with a book idea. It wasn't yet 5 Steps to Happy. It was a completely different idea about a little village. It was basically like a village sort of narrative type novel, which maybe I'll revisit one day, who knows. So I did that in the evenings. So it was really, really good. And after that, I kind of got the bug even more. At the end, you have a drinks reception and you can kind of go and pitch a book to people. I didn't because I was a bit too shy at that. Amazingly too shy, although...
Wow.
In general life, I'm not shy at all, but I just didn't feel like I could go up to someone and be like, ah. But one of the agents who was at that drinks reception actually is now my agent.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, so he's called Richard Pike. And I do remember speaking to him, and we laugh about this now. I remember speaking to him at that drinks night and saying, oh, I really want to write a book. But he, at the time, most of his list was non-fiction. And I distinctly remember saying to him, oh, you won't like my book idea. That's a really great way to promote yourself, isn't it? Yeah, hi there, you won't like this.
But, but he obviously remembered you.
Well, yeah, because then a year later after I had my accident and thought, oh, hang on a minute, that what's happened to me could kind of be the catalyst for a book idea. I originally wanted to write a non-fiction book about trauma. So I thought, oh, non-fiction, I know who I can target.
Yep.
And so I had a meeting with him and he loved the idea and he signed me there and then pretty much.
Wow.
And then it evolved into a novel later after I was at a kind of journalism event at my editor from Orion's house, and I cornered her in the kitchen after quite a lot of wine and said, oh, look, I've got this idea. Yeah. And the next day, my agent emailed me saying, what did you say to her last night? Because she loves your book. And I remember thinking,
what did I say?
Not quite sure. So, yes, a lot of wine obviously helped me then with the confidence.
And how did you find the actual writing process? Because I know, you know, you undertake a lot of interviewing. I know, for example, you've interviewed recently Idris Elba, which lots of our listeners will be really jealous about.
On the phone, sadly.
Not in the flesh.
He was in Hawaii, but, you know, my work wouldn't fly me to Hawaii.
Oh. But clearly there's a difference between interviewing and, you know, writing a novel. How did you go about that process?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult with a full-time job. It is difficult. It's kind of about carving out the time that works best for you. So for me, I'm more of a morning person. So I would wake up before work early, just only like an hour early. I'd get up at like 6, and then I would write for an hour before leaving for work. And what would happen is I was frequently late for work because I'd be writing and then be like, oh god, I've got to go, and not want to leave because I was so immersed in the world of the story. But that's how I did it every morning. And then I was quite disciplined. I used my lunch break as well, so obviously an hour lunch break, so I would use that too to write in. By the evening I wasn't very good. Probably, I don't know whether part of it is because my job is writing, my day job. Mm. So by the evening, I was just too tired to be creative. But there's also a really great scheme called National Novel Writing Month, which it happens every November. Okay. And it's a worldwide initiative. And the idea is that you write 50,000 words, which is not quite a novel, but 50,000 words in November. But it's a website, free to sign up to. Anyone can sign up to it. And then you can put your word count. Every day you can type in, like, you know, 461 words or whatever. And then it works out how many days to go until you get to the 50,000.
Oh, that's clever.
Which I found really, really helpful. But you can join local communities as well. So I joined the London one, and they do, like, these things called write-ins, where all over London, people who are doing this scheme will, you know, they'll meet in a cafe at a certain time of day, and everyone just be strangers. I'd turn up, but you know everyone's doing National Novel Writing Month, so you just turn up with your laptop and you sit there and
wow, it's like another world on. Ella, do you feel like you've kind of entered another world with the writing?
Yeah definitely. It's a great world, though. The writing community is so supportive. They're such a great bunch of people.
Well, I've been stalking your social media, I'm not ashamed to say, and I can see that you're really, really busy, but what I love is also you're very positive. Do you think what happened to you has actually affected your life for the better in some ways?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've had opportunities that I would never have imagined. You know, perhaps one day I might have written a book, but it wouldn't have been this book, and it wouldn't necessarily have come at this time in my life. It might have taken me years and years to get it published. So that's obviously the one really big thing. But then just other things, like I've done lots of sort of sporting type events. I'm not sporty. I know I lost my leg running. I'm not sporty at all. I'm not athletic. My sister is the sporty one. I am the very unsporty one. There's a certain irony being that I was running. I got described in the Metro as a runner. It was like runner Ella Dove lost her leg, and I read that headline and was fun. My family found it hilarious. Yeah. They were like, runner? Anyway, but doing all these sporting challenges. So I'm really keen swimmer. That is the one sport I've always loved. I'm a really keen swimmer. And I've done it a few times now, this triathlon event, which is a disability triathlon called the Superhero Series, which every year it's at Dorney Lake in Windsor. And you can either do one of the three elements or you can do all three. So I do the swim, and it's for the Limbless Association, a great charity that I'm an ambassador of.
Yeah.
The camaraderie on the day, the feeling of community, you know, it's not just amputees, you can, any disability. And so I did it last year with my family. So we had Team Dove. So I did, the rule is you have to just have at least one person that's got a disability on your team. So I did the swim, my dad did the cycle, and then my sister did the run, which was quite poignant for her to do the run.
But I mean,
she absolutely smashed it as well. She was like, is it okay that I'm overtaking people in wheelchairs? I feel really bad. And I was like, so she's very competitive.
You mentioned there the Limbless Association, and I know that supporting that and inspiring others is really important to you. Can you explain to me why and what you do?
Yeah, so they are the UK's charity for amputees, and their slogan is "No amputee need cope alone." So providing all kinds of support to amputees, from practical things, you know, sort of grants you can apply for when it comes to blue badges, all these different schemes that you might not know about. So they can provide all that. And then, of course, the emotional support as well. Yeah. So they have kind of community hubs where you can get together and talk to other amputees. They have like sort of mentoring one-to-one. I've recently been appointed as their young ambassador coordinator. So one Fantastic. Thing that they're trying to do at the minute is to work more with younger amputees, because you don't often see that. And you see kind of in the Paralympics and the forces, but you don't often see beyond those two things many younger amputees. And I kind of want to show people that, you know, you don't have to be a Paralympian. Because I think there's a thing, you see a young person who's missing a limb and you think, and I've had it many times, probably because I live in Stratford near the Olympic Park. People will be like, oh, were you a Paralympian? Yeah. No, I'm just young and I've got one leg.
That's because of that article about you being a runner.
Maybe. Could well be.
So you're clearly proud of being an ambassador, which is absolutely wonderful. What other things do you do? I think you've gone into hospitals and visited other patients there.
Yeah, I have. And back to the rehab centre in Lambeth that I went to, that I was a patient at. So that's a 12-bed unit where people are taken in for 5 to 6 weeks. That's where the thing about moving around the kitchen, that's where all that happened. So, yes, I've been back there a couple of times.
What was that like going back?
Yeah, I mean, fine. I think I have a weird thing now where I'm almost proud when I go back there, because it's a sign of how far I've come. You know, I can stroll down the corridors that once I was rolling down in a wheelchair, or, you know, I was full of fear, holding onto crutches, my knuckles turning white because I was so scared of taking a step, you know, with a physio behind me, sort of like making sure I didn't fall over. So to then just like casually stroll down the corridor is a really lovely feeling, actually. And I think for other amputees, when you're at the beginning of that journey, it's really nice to see somebody who's kind of come through it. So I had the same thing when I was in hospital. A couple of amputees, my surgeon arranged to come and see me when I was still in hospital before rehab. And one girl I'm still in touch with, and we're really good friends. And yes, it does make all the difference being able to ask those questions to another amputee.
And you've also been campaigning, I've seen as I've been stalking you, you've been campaigning for better support with people who've experienced trauma. I'd like to ask a little bit more about that, because I think it's something that people in general in life don't talk about, all sorts of traumatic things that happen to them. What do you think people should do about that, and how can we support people with all sorts of different kind of trauma?
So that's the other charity that I'm an ambassador for, the Barts Health charity. So they're linked to all the Barts Trust across London, the hospitals, including the Royal London Hospital where I was a patient. And yeah, they have an appeal called Transform Trauma that I've got quite heavily involved in, and it is all about opening that conversation and providing support. So they're doing all kinds of fab things. I think it might be live now, but they've invented an app, a trauma survivors app, so with loads of information on it. And there's also a section for like carers of people or family members, people who've gone through trauma, you know, lots of practical information and forums as well on there that you can talk to other people in similar situations. Yeah, so I am really passionate about it. And I think trauma is one of those words where we kind of use it and it could mean anything, you know. It could be psychological trauma, it could be physical trauma. And also, it doesn't just affect the person, it affects this wider circle of all their friends and family, colleagues, everyone around them. So I do think that the support does need to be better.
And how would you advise people who know a colleague at work or a friend who's been through something very traumatic, perhaps like yourself, they've lost a limb or something, you know, equally devastating has happened to them? Quite often in my experience of friends, people tend to clam up and not want to talk about it. How would you think the best way is to go about that?
I think just reaching out and just being there. I think when I lost my leg, a few people say to me, oh, well, I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. But actually, I'd prefer that you said something, you know, even if it's just thinking of you or sending love or whatever it might be, you know. I think sometimes people are so overwhelmed by hearing that someone's had a horrendous accident that they don't know quite how to deal with it. Yeah. And so, but I think that staying silent is probably the worst thing you can do, because it makes the person going through that think, oh, well, they obviously don't care. But actually, it could be that they care too much.
Yeah, and they don't know how to deal with it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So just a little message saying that you're thinking of them goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure. What's next for Ella Dove? The very, very busy Ella Dove, I have to say.
Oh, so busy. So it's all great, though. So what is next for me? I'm planning book two, which I can't tell you too much about at the moment because it's very, very early stages. It's not going to be about an amputee, though. It's going to be something completely different. Prove to everyone that I can write fiction that's not about myself.
I look forward to that.
Not a one-trick pony. So I'm planning that now.
Exciting.
Hopefully, it definitely won't be next year that it comes out. Perhaps the year after. Yeah.
But imagine Ella going back five years ago. Can you imagine those words coming out of your mouth? I'm working on my second novel.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's just wonderful, really. I mean, I'd just like to thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. I really think you're a true inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
And I wish you all the very best for everything you do, all the work you do in volunteering work, and all the best with your novel.
Thank you very much.
For more amazing interviews with amazing women, please visit radiogorgeous.com.